Hey everybody, this is Brian coming at you from late 2022. You're about to listen to one of the original episodes of the Internet History Podcast, a project I started way back in 2014. It eventually became a book called How the Internet Happened, From Netscape to the iPhone, written by me, but these are the original chapters and interviews I did for that book. So here you have all the original oral history interviews, the original players of the internet era in their own words. You'll get hours more detail and stories here than I was able to even fit in the book. If you like this podcast, buy the book, but also the podcasts stand on their own. Almost 300 hours of original source material of internet history. They've been downloaded about 3 million times over the years. And if you like what you hear here, search and subscribe to What I Do Today, the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast, a daily tech news podcast I've been doing since 2018. Basically, the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast is the history of the internet every day in real time.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to the Internet History Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brian McCullough. Apologies for the brief summer vacation these last couple weeks, but we're back with a great episode. Angelica Fulleman is a designer who worked early on with BookSense.com and then got hired by Audible early on. So this is the early story of Audible for the first time. It's funny. Audio, streaming music, podcasts, audiobooks, it seems so obvious now. But when you look back, it really is funny to think about how off the wall all of this stuff seemed before the smartphone. You mean books on tape will be a thing? My thanks to Angelica Fulleman. Angelica Fulleman, thanks for coming on the Internet History Podcast.
No, thanks for having me.
So you're a designer, I guess graphic designer mostly. Like, you got a BFA in graphic communications, and you worked in publishing, and you've done book covers and CD-ROM covers and things like that. I'm curious, when the web came around and got popular in the early mid-90s, I know you eventually work with web companies and things like that, but I've not actually been able to ask this question of anyone before. What do you think that the impact of the web was on things like graphic design?
Well, that's definitely interesting. Well, I mean, it was very interesting to go into publishing and then switch over to web design, because, you know, desktop publishing was, you know, transformed publishing, and then HTML is kind of based off of desktop publishing. So it was kind of, it was interesting to see that progression. And, you know, I don't think it's as big of a split as it used to be, but there's still designers that just exclusively do print and exclusively do web. And since the platforms are very different, there's a different mentality of how to approach it. And it has, and it's been interesting to see kind of how the web design has influenced print design.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned there's this split. Like, early on, was there a split because of, like, the constraints? I even remember this of, like, you know, early versions of HTML and things like that. There's literally things you can't do, you know, even as dumb as, like, centering images and text and things like that. So, when the web comes along, is it that desktop publishing, you could do so many more things, and then the web and HTML and CSS and things like that had to catch up?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely, because I mean, you could barely do anything in the beginning. Like, it was very, very constraining, and, you know, you only had 256 colors, and you only had tables. And so, you know, if you wanted to do real design, you know, that's in print, where you can do anything, you know. But with the web, especially in the beginning, you were very, very limited. And I think those limitations kind of affected how, especially in the beginning, like how web design developed and created a, you know, those constraints kind of, I think, created a certain look and feel as, you know, as it progressed.
In what way? Is that a positive way? Like, you know, sometimes constraints are good for the creative process?
Yeah, no, I would definitely say it was in the positive. In the beginning, it was very constrained, but then you know, as it continued to broaden, then it was interesting to see like how like print and web were kind of like playing off each other a little bit. I definitely found that very interesting. I think there's like David Carson was a really early on a designer who became famous for doing website design. And a lot of his design work and look and feel was then I started seeing it go into print design.
Well, and then a lot of the, I've spoken to a lot of people on the show about how much, you know, some of the basic conceptual ideas of how web pages were designed were taken out of the print world, you know, even the whole concept of doing banner ads and having above the fold and things like that, and above the fold in the web world being the scroll down on the screen and things like that. So early on, like, it's almost like because there is no template, the only template that designers could pull from would be print, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. And there was a lot of people who, well, like in the beginning, nobody knew what they were doing, so they were just figuring it out. But there were some time when the industry was developing or had developed somewhat, then people would enter with like just the print background and then would do try to do web design. And then you could kind of see that they were trying to, they didn't quite understand how it was built. Like, I don't profess to, like, understand exactly how anything's built these days because it's just so, you know, freaking complicated. But it was definitely interesting to see, like, the mentality that you had to kind of, you know, you kind of had to rewire your brain a bit in order to approach it. And I know with print, I mean, it's all about, you know, doing press checks and understanding how printing works. And then, you know, you have like 300 DPI, like huge files. And for, you know, for web, it's only 72 DPI that you have to prep for. Now, of course, with you know, really high res screens, like, you know, in on the iPhone and stuff, that res is now changed to become, you know, higher. But now it's been interesting.
So when do you start to do some of your first web and digital work? Is it the booksense.com project?
No, that's definitely an early one. Let's see. I was at McGraw-Hill for 3 years and then CD-ROMs came out and I was like, ooh, those are cool. Mm-hmm. So let me look around and see if I can get a job doing that. And then when I finally kind of was starting to look, it was starting to die. And then the web kind of grew up, you know, from its ashes, as it were. And then I started working at a startup called, let's see, Small World Software. And it was started by three guys, and it was on the Upper West Side. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it was about 20 people. And they had a fantasy football platform that was built by their division of Small World Software. Mm-hmm. And so they did that. And then the other half was, you know, doing, you know, agency work.
So, skipping ahead a little bit, but feel free to fill me in if I'm missing an important transition. How do you come to work at Audible? Is it Audible's always been East Coast based, right?
Yes, always.
Well, actually, you know what? Let me circle back before I ask you how you joined Audible. Could you fill me in just from your perspective and your how it was told to you, just the story of Audible and the company as it existed before you got there?
Okay. well, I heard about Audible. I was working at an interactive agency. That was Small World Software got bought by an agency, and then we merged and became huge and stuff. And they hired a developer, and we started chatting. And then he mentioned that he had worked at Audible, and I'm like, "What's that?" And so he, you know, he's telling me about it, and he actually had one of the original Audible players. And so he was like showing it to me and like, you know, describing kind of what he did and everything like that. So that was kind of like the first time I heard about it. And now that was maybe 1998, 99.
Can you, let me just interject real quick. So, again, this is 1998, 99. So MP3 players aren't even on the scene yet. So you're describing Audible created its own player. Like, can you describe that to me, like, what it was?
Well, it was, you know, by default, people will kind of say it's like an MP3 player. It's not. It's like a digital audio player. So Audible had its own format, and I know it grew out of the phone company and their technology, because that was the first people that were dealing with compression. And I think, you know, with Bell Labs and everything like that, that started like in the 30s or something. And so it wasn't an MP3 player. It was a format that Audible came up with.
How did someone get the audio on to the device?
It was a PC, and it was through Audible Manager. That was software that they had developed.
But it was small enough that I could carry it around with me.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Like, let me see. I'm looking at my phone. You know, I think it's slightly wider and taller than the iPhone 7, and definitely fatter. You know, I mean, the Rio player, it kind of was that form figure. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That size.
And so, again, I think Audible was founded like in 95 or something like that. Don Katz, and, you know, I think they went public in the dot-com era and things like that. But, and we'll get to this idea definitely about like being too soon or something like that. But so when you hear about it and when you, when you maybe even get recruited to Audible, like, what's the state of the company? Is it something that seems like an up-and-comer, something that's exciting to you?
Well, that's definitely an interesting question, because I started there, like, let's see, February of 2001. So that was like 6 months before September 11th. And it was kind of, like, things had been starting to, you know, go down in the stock market in New York, and, you know, where all the, you know, the agencies were. And so I was actually lucky to have switched, I always felt, in February of 2001, because and that I found a job actually in New Jersey versus in New York City. Because, like, once September 11th happened, like, all the jobs basically disappeared. It was kind of like the death nail, you know, on the door, as it were. Because I knew a lot of people who were, you know, let go around that time. And they didn't get jobs for, like, you know, years. like at least in the industry, that so they had to like switch to something else.
So the dot-com bubble has burst or is in the process of bursting, and like you said, it's the sort of the nail in the coffin. This is also, so 2001, it's September 2001 that the iPod is first released. So when you join the company, like, what is their status? Are they maybe one of those dot-com companies that's on the verge of maybe going under? Are they seeing that there could be this new sort of portable device universe, this gadgetry universe that we're familiar with now on the horizon? What, before we get into what you do when you join, what is the state of the company when you join?
Well, that's also an interesting question, because like I had been laid off from the interactive agency, and so I was just like a little gun shy. And like, so I was interviewing Audible, and then I asked, it's like, well, how's the company doing? You know, blah blah blah. And so I was reassured that everything was fine. And then I think I can't remember, but it seemed pretty shortly after, like maybe 2 months later, they had a 40% layoffs.
Yeah, very common at the time. And by the way,
yes.
lucky that it's not 90% or 100%.
That's very true.
So what are you hired to do?
I was a web designer. There was like, God, I think when the layoffs happened, I think I was the only one standing for a little while, and I reported into the marketing director.
How from your perspective, how and why did Audible survive?
Oh, how did they survive?
Yeah, from this era specifically, like if people are going down and it seems to be there's layoffs happening, it seems to be a little questionable. So, like, what's the thing that keeps Audible alive while you're there?
Well, I think one thing, and I'm not sure if this is true or not, but, you know, I saw, like, in New York City, people were buying huge spaces, you know, paying huge amounts of rent. And then, you know, the bubble burst, and then they're stuck with these, you know, these leases and everything like that. And Audible never had offices in New York City. They always had the main office. Well, now it's in Newark, but before that, it was always in Wayne, New Jersey, you know, just in a regular, you know, office building. So I'm sure that rent was a hell of a lot cheaper than, you know, being in a building in New York City. So I always felt that just in itself is like just not having that overhead. But I don't know. I always felt that was, you know, something that was good.
Mm-hmm.
So that was definitely helpful. But I would say, I don't know. I would say, I mean, the godsend basically was that, you know, the iPod came out, because mm-hmm. like MP3 players at the time, like they were kind of just for techies. You know, and it was kind of marketed and described that way. So, and you know, they were okay looking, but they weren't anything like really snazzy. And then the iPod came out, and they basically said, you know, 1,000 songs in your pocket, and people could understand what that meant. You know, and it was a sell, because like before that, like when we were trying to sell all, you know, the Audible, you know, audiobooks, people would always say like, oh, well, what's an MP3? They didn't even know what that format mm-hmm. was or mm-hmm. what it was. So we had to tell people, it's like, no, you're not going to get cassettes or CDs in the mail. This is this digital audio format that you download and listen on a portable player. Which was, you know, nobody knew what that was in the beginning.
I was going to say that was always part of Audible's, like, it wasn't, you know, booksontape.com. It was always, and I'm even thinking of this, like, in relation to Netflix and how they're like, well, we did start with, you know, DVDs by mail, but we eventually always wanted to get to digital delivery. Audible was always digital delivery from day one, right?
Yeah, yes, definitely. Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming that a huge deal was when Audible signs a deal with Apple, and I think 2004 to bring audiobooks into the iTunes Music Store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure of the exact date, but
yeah.
I mean, Apple came to Audible. It wasn't the other way around.
And so, is that again? You know, from your perspective, is that when all of a sudden, like, the business, again, almost the idea of being too soon, but like all of a sudden, okay, now this is the ecosystem that we're supposed to exist in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we just, you know, there was a fabulous player, and then also people just, you know, I mean, we rode the wave, definitely. You know, the iPod took off, and we kind of like paralleled it up.
Definitely. So I'm curious. So like you guys are aware of that? Once we're in the iTunes store, sales are starting to take off. Like, finally, the thing that we've been promising for almost a decade is actually happening.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, I mean, there was phenomenal growth.
Do you leave before the Amazon acquisition happens?
Yeah, I leave a year before. So I leave in 2007.
Did you have any sense of something like that Audible's destiny is probably to be acquired by somebody like Amazon or maybe Apple?
Well, all the time I was as Audible, we were talking, like, is it going to be Amazon or Apple who's going to buy us? I mean, maybe we were just like, oh, you know, we don't know. Would it be this or would it be that? So it was always kind of like, we would always kind of think about it and like chat about it.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm specifically talking to you to talk about the idea of audio on digital audio and audio as a component of the web and things like that. Is there something that you saw that Audible had an understanding of that, you know, because when the web starts, it's like, it's the idea of this multimedia. It's, you can get video, you can do this and that. So, and the fact that text and things like that are, you know, totally searchable, and that's how Google has organized the web and things like that. So one of the things that I'm kind of poking at in this project is how audio kind of stands outside of things. There's no YouTube for audio necessarily. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, at the time, did Audible have some sort of an understanding of audio in a digital era that maybe even people haven't realized yet? Like, I'm having a hard time even forming a coherent question on this. Maybe your perspective on how audio works in the digital era, not music, but like stories and books and spoken word and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, when I don't know if this exactly answers your question, but you know, when I started there, I didn't really think that much about, you know, I was a big reader, you know, and I was just like, I was always thinking like, well, why would I want to listen to it? You know, it's like, I'd rather read it. And then, you know, I was able to get, you know, content for free. You know, a comp account. So I started listening in the car, and I ended up really enjoying it because it's it's the book, but it's also the narrator as well. And the narrator can either make or break the audio recording of the book. And so it's an interesting kind of like, you know, like somebody's telling you the story, and, you know, you're on the go and everything like that. So the experience is very different than reading a book. And like sometimes even like, if, especially if it's a humorist, there's Bill Bryson is a fantastic narrator of his book. Yeah. Oh, it's fabulous. And it's just like, it like transforms the book into something, you know, a lot more, you know, engaging than if you were just reading it. So,
are you still an Audible customer today?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Thank you, Angelica, for sharing the Audible story with us, and thanks for sharing a little bit of context in terms of graphic design and the history of the early web.
Oh, thanks very much, Brian.
If you like what you've heard on this episode, please support us by subscribing to the podcast so you can get great news stories and conversations every 2 weeks. And please buy the book that was based on this podcast, How the Internet Happened, From Netscape to the iPhone, by me, Brian McCullough. Order it now wherever books are sold, How the Internet Happened. And if you weren't aware, I host a daily tech news podcast every weekday that comes out at 5 p.m. In that show, I tell you what happened that day in the world of tech. It's only 15 to 20 minutes long, and it's great if you love tech news. Search your podcast app for Ride Home to find the show. It's called The Tech Meme Ride Home. Thanks.